Today's program was brought to you by Union Beer. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
I'm Linda Palaccio, host of A Taste of the Past. You're listening to Heritage Radio Network, broadcasting live from Bushwick, Brooklyn. If you like this program, visit heritageradionetwork.org for thousands more.
Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special live show at Jimmy's Number 43. Be United, one of our favorite importers of European and other beers, is hosting an annual event, Nepenthea, tomorrow in Connecticut, where they have special brewers come from all over the world. As you can hear, it's a live show. There's people talking. We're at Jimmy's Number 43, and we're lucky enough to get some of the brewers in the room with us. We got Michael Opolensky from Be United and Justin Phillips from Beer Table who are going to help guide me. So far, we have Jerome DuPont from Domaine DuPont. How are you, sir?
I'm fine, thank you.
Great. Giovanni Campari and Manuel Piccoli of Birrificio del Ducato. And Jeremy Luz of Beavertown Brewery in the UK. So we're going to try to see how we can do on the show, guys, back in the studio. But, hey, welcome to Beer Sessions Radio, Heritage Radio Network. I'm Jimmy Carboni from Jimmy's Number 43. Thank you to our sponsor, Beer Union Beer Distributor, supplier of world-class ales and lagers. Okay, here we are. We're going to give it a shot. It's really loud. Let's go around the room. So, Michael, tell us about Nepenthea and about the brewers that you brought here.
So, Nepenthea, this will be the second edition of this event. So far, we've done it every other year since the first edition, which was done 2 years ago. Essentially, it's inviting a lot of... it's a trade-only event, so we invite many of our accounts and wholesalers from around the country to come to our warehouse up in Oxford, Connecticut. We set up various tables around our facility where the brewers that we invite can display some of their products. We invite the wholesalers and accounts to come in, taste the products from these producers, see a little bit what we do. As you know, we do a lot of barrel aging at our facility, to see that operation, see the brewery where we're now brewing beers from. Essentially, just see from how Be United works up in Connecticut.
All right. And Justin, you know, you used to work for Be United. You have Beer Table. You know a lot of these brewers, too. So tell us a little more about your experience with these guys.
Yeah, I mean, just from my perspective, it's a really nice event where a lot of folks get together that get to show really special products that we otherwise don't get to taste all in one sitting. So it's a nice day.
And one of the beers we're tasting right now is the Birzella Mattina from you guys at Del Ducato. It's such a pleasure to meet you guys. You have a beer called Piccolo, don't you?
Yes.
We had that for a long time. I know we've had a lot of your Italian beers. So what's it like for you coming to America with your product?
Well, it's such a pleasure to visit you. Every time we come to New York, we pay a visit to you, Jimmy. So it's such a pleasure. Well, talking about our Nuova Birzella Mattina, it's... this beer is one of our best-seller beer. It's a blend between a lambic that we buy from our friend Kert from Alt Birzel in the Pajottenland in Belgium, and we blend with our saison, which is called Nuova Mattina. Then we let it age for minimum 6 to 9 months, and then. The beer is ready. The funny thing and the interesting thing for the taster is that this beer has a very a great evolution in the month. So in the beginning you feel more the saison, and in the years of aging the lambic overcome to the saison. So it's different.
You know, we've met you a few times, Giovanni. Manuel, it's the first time that you've been here.
Yes, for me it's the first time in your fantastic pubs, but I was sometimes in New York and sometimes in the U.S. market. I love U.S., I love New York, and it's a pleasure for me every time I come here. And to be able to drink a lot of craft beer that we don't have the possibility to find in Italy. And so it's a very, very good trip for us to present our beer and to drink a lot of good beers.
That's great. Just so you guys know, all that food's for you. So there's food for you, Justin, if you guys want to eat it, because we're gonna talk to these guys a little more. So your role in the brewery, so it's Birrificio del Ducato. So much has changed in Italian beer. Just tell us how you guys started and, you know, the roles you have in the brewery. What jobs do you do?
Yes, I'm the administrator of the Ducato Brewery, and me and Giovanni are the founder of the company. And we are increasing a lot of this year and in the last year, because we are building a new brewery. So this year, finally, we can able to open the third brewery that we have in Italy, and it's the bigger for us. And with this brewery, we can able to satisfy a lot of new market and a lot of beer that we love to produce.
Well, of course, I'm Giovanni, and I'm a co-founder of Birrificio del Ducato and the Brewmaster, and we're facing in Italy new hype of the craft beer movement, and the Italian craft beer movement started in 1996, but it really blew up in 2005-2007. We started our adventure in 2007, so we're 8 years old, and we are building, as Manuel said, our third brewery, which will be one of the biggest in the craft beer industry. And the second one will be closed and disassembled. We will keep some tanks and equipment for the other breweries. And the first one will be turned into a sour beer brewery only. We have more than 700 hectoliters of wooden barrel aging. We have some fermenters. Eventually, I'd love to install some concrete fermenters as well, at least in Oxford, Connecticut, at the United facility. And there we will experiment a lot. We made a lot of sour beers. We brew some spontaneous fermented beers like Chrysopolis, which is a beer that never see the still. The first time this beer see still is when it's poured on the draft. So it's fermented in wood. And we brew many sours, but I think that, in my opinion, this is the future. I mean, craft beer, the global craft beer movement will go, that's my point, in towards two directions, sessions and sours. Because the session beers are the more satisfying, easy drinking, thirst quenching, and the sours are the more complex. So are the missing ring between beer and wine, and so a lot of complexity, like some wines, but with the drinkability of beers. So if you can have a session sour beer,
that's like this Brazil Martini
in some way. Yeah, it is. Yes.
Yeah. And what was it like starting a brewery in Italy? Like, how did you get the money? Because you're in New York City, you know, everyone has money in New York.
I think to get money in Italy is very difficult. It's better to get money in the U.S. market. It's a joke, naturally. But I think, actually, the craft beer in Italy is one of the limited sector that have a big development, and so we can make a good job, we can make a show investment in establishing people, in working in research and development, because it's one of the food alimentary sector that in Italy is very new and is very appreciated all over the world. And we have no history of the beer, we have a history of the wine, but we have this, we have built something in this year that can say that we are important in the craft beer, also with the people, with our country that have a history. And so it's a new movement that we can improve, we can sell abroad, and I think it's very interesting for us and for all over the world.
this show is going to be a little different. It's loud here, so we're just going to talk to a couple of guys at a time. But Michael, come on in. Tell us what you have to say about this beer Ficchio.
Del Ducano. We're really proud to have them in our portfolio. I mean, we've spoken before at length on this show and just together, Jimmy, about the excitement of the Italian craft beer movement, what's been going on over there over the last 15 years. And in my opinion, and I don't think I'm really the only one, but Del Ducato is one of the most talented breweries that's making beer right now in Italy, without a doubt. And I mean, worldwide even. They're
you remember when they first came into the American market, the Piccolo, it's an Italian lager.
The first time...
Via Emilia,
but the first time we get into the U.S. market, it was, I remember because I was there, we made a tasting at Brooklyn, at the beer table, Justice Place. It was in early December 2007. I remember.
And you brought in first what? The Via Emilia?
No. Nuova Mattina was the first beer to be exported to the United States.
And then, how does it do for you guys? Did you have to sell this beer, or did it just catch on with the beer enthusiasts?
When we first started, in general, it was an uphill battle. I mean, the Italian beers are on the pricier side. So it took a while to get placements for Ducato beers and really any of the Italian beers in our portfolio in general. But lately there's been a lot of press on it, and the quality is evident in the products. So with our work on the field and maybe some interest from other restaurants and beer bars like yours and others around the city that are dedicated to quality craft beers from around the world, slowly but surely we were able to place a product. It certainly wasn't something where Ducato arrived and it was flying out of our doors. No, it took a little bit of time to get stick with a lot of these Italian beers. I mean, it was a new country that new to the beer world, so it wasn't necessarily... you wouldn't walk into a place like, oh yeah, of course I'll take a keg from this guy or that guy. No, it took some convincing, but again, the quality is there. There is a certain level of innovation behind these breweries that, again, is evident. So, yeah, slowly but surely.
As an American, I love the Italian craft beers, but I also get confused by the names. It's true, right? There's so many. How many craft breweries are in Italy right now?
More than 800.
800.
850, we can see. And every month, new breweries is coming up.
Let's just get everybody in tight. We're at a table in the front of Jimmy's number 43. It's very loud. So, Jeremy, you're making a beer's town in England. Do you get a chance to taste the Italian beers that the United's import?
Well, to be honest, I think we were just talking about when we first met was at a beer festival in Rome called Eurohop.
Yeah.
And something that really struck me when you were talking about kind of the Italian craft beer scene is the memories that I have from that, which is my first experience of the Italian craft beer scene, that it's absolutely booming. People are fanatical for beer, and it was so incredibly refreshing. They wanted to talk to you about how the beer was made, what went into it, the different processes, and they were genuine fans. And it was in mass. I mean, the crowds that were at this festival was fantastic. And then later I got the opportunity to go to Salone del Gusto, and I saw the blend between the slow food movement and the craft beer movement. And I think that really put it into perspective for me about the origins of craft beer and how rooted they are in slow food and in that interest in knowing where your product comes from, what goes into it, who makes it, all of that.
And what was it in Italy that made the craft beer scene take off? Because you're ahead of other countries.
I don't know what was the sparkle that lit the fire. But now the fire is burning a lot. And we have more than 800 microbreweries, but the demand for craft beers is increasing day by day. And that's the reason why we decided to open a pub, our first pub, not in Italy, but in London. So 2 months ago, we opened,
opened a pub in London.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Well, how can you do that? You know, like, we did at the EU or something? Or?
We did. We have a partner in London. We have a, we are two of Manuel and me, Beneficial Ducato. We host the pub with other partners. One from Rome is a famous publican from Rome. And another partner from our town, who is in London. And we opened in Chiswick. This pub is called the Italian Job. And it's the, it's the first.
You know it, Jeremy.
Yes. The UK's first Italian craft beer pub. And
I didn't know
English,
that you were behind it, though.
Yes, we.
That's fantastic.
We
own it. Yes. Brilliant.
And the English seems to love it. And,
yeah. We only sell Italian craft beer.
Only Italian craft beer and Italian food. Yes, not, we have Italian stuff, Italian craft food. And,
how big is this place, the Italian Job?
It's more like...
It's,
it's
not too much big. It's smaller. But it's very nice because we have 12... draft cakes on the table, and we have also our beer, but we can have a lot of Italian craft brewery, and we can have the possibility to invite our colleague, our Italian brewer, and so we can show the Italian movement in London by producer but also by consumer.
Yes, we want to showcase the Italian in itself, not only
like,
us.
On a typical night, if I go to the Italian Job in London, what are the 12 different breweries you might have on draft here?
Not 12 different breweries. Well, 12 beers on draft, 10 on, 10 by kegs and 2 hand pumps, and normally the half from Birrificio del Ducato and the rest from other Italian craft breweries like Borgo,
Birrificio
Italiano, many others.
That's cool, man. Michael, you want to say, we're going to close out this session, man. Anything else you want to say about Italian craft beer?
I think we've covered it. Pretty exciting stuff. No, I mean, they're great beers from Ducato.
This Birzel Mattina is awesome. Let's toast to that. Again, we're doing a special session here at Jimmy's Number 43. May 1st. This is what we're doing for May 1st. This is our protest. We're celebrating good beer in New York. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
I'm
welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. This is a special show, May 1st, 2015. We're at Jimmy's number 43 with the gang, special brewers from Beat United. Tomorrow is their Nepenthea biannual event. They've invited a number of their brewers in from South Africa, England, Italy, and beyond. And we're lucky enough to have them in New York City. Michael, I know that with Nepenthea coming, how many brewers are here from other countries?
I believe...
over 20?
No. I think we have about 10 producers.
Yeah. So
this is
today
me trying
to
count them quickly in my head.
Today we have Jeremy from Beavertown.
We should have 5 different producers,
Paolo,
if I remember correctly.
From Beer del Borgo.
Yep.
Manuel and Giovanni from Beer Fico del Ducato.
That's right.
Garth is here from Makana Meadery, South Africa. We're doing a special show with him.
That's right.
And Jerome is here from DuPont. So that's this is a jackpot. We are the place.
I know. And, New York is the winner.
I just love the style that you guys have, and I love the brewers that you have.
Thank you, Jimmy.
Next up, we've got Jeremy Lewis of Beavertown Brewery. And just tell us a little bit about Beavertown.
Yeah, Beavertown.
I know it's from the Cockney part of Victorian London.
Ah,
you guys haven't changed in 200 years.
You've done a little research. Beavertown was founded by Logan Plant in 2011 as a brew pub concept called Duke's Brewing Q. Logan was inspired by a trip to New York, coincidentally, where he was playing a gig and went to Fete Sal and was inspired by the scene that he saw there. So he decided to do that himself in London. So he created Duke's Brewing Q in an area of London, East London, called De Beauvoir Town, which the Cockneys of East London coined Beavar Town, which became Beaver Town. So the restaurant was called Duke's Brewing Q, and the beer that he was producing for the restaurant was called Beavertown. He focused on two recipes in the beginning, exclusively to pair with the food that was produced in the restaurant. One was a smoked porter called Smog Rocket, and that was to pair with the beef ribs. And the other was called 8 Ball, which is a rye IPA, and that was to pair with the pork ribs.
What are we drinking? This is a special beer you brought over from
This
England.
Is a very special beer. This is the UK's first canned double IPA, and it's called Skull King. I don't even believe it's been released in the UK yet. So if this gets dropped before it is, then there's going to be a lot of angry Brits running around.
I think on the radio we get special access sometimes, right?
Definitely.
I think I met Logan a couple years ago. I met a British guy with a beard,
yeah,
who was talking about he was inspired by Feta Sau and he was checking out barbecue places. So it might have been...
You might have seen him just before he created Duke's and Beavertown. But shortly after Beavertown was started, people began asking about the beer, and they wanted to wholesale the beer. So he very quickly had to expand. So the first expansion was a storage unit right around the corner from the restaurant. So he would continue to brew in the restaurant opposite the smokers in the kitchen. He'd have to brew in the mornings and clear out before the chefs got there. And then he'd hop behind the bar and pour
Jeremy,
the beers.
Are you American?
I am. I'm from Oregon.
I know. You just screwed up my show.
Yeah.
I was expecting a really good English accent.
No.
Forget it.
You're not getting that from me. Sorry.
So London.
It's a bloody mess.
What are the laws like? Can you just put a pub, a brewery in your pub or your restaurant?
Well, yeah. We're not bound by the three-tier system that the United States has. So we, as beer producers, can sell to the consumer. We can sell to a wholesaler. We can sell to an importer. We're free to trade with whoever we like. It's a blessing and a curse because it makes for chaos when you're trying to distribute your product around the country because you get lots of people who are infighting and kind of all of this. So we take a really considered approach to who we trade with and how we trade in order to minimize the sort of fallback.
So as you guys grow, when do you make that decision to sell to the United States?
That decision was made probably about a year ago, kind of just before our major expansion, where we've moved into our current site, where we're brewing 50-heck batches into 100-heck fermenting vessels, and we have a dozen of those. So just before that, Matthias visited the brewery in Stour Road. I believe he made a very good impression, as he does most times, and his idea and his philosophy towards beer distribution was very well received by us. us, and we very much appreciated the consideration that he took towards it.
Well, I feel like I'm in the Rockstar Hall of Fame here today. We've got all these great brewers. We got Beavertown, Del Borgo's coming up, Del Ducato. The Makana Meadery from South Africa is with us. He's going to be on another show with us. And Justin Phillips, you know, Brew Table, you've kind of been in the front lines since the beginning of all this stuff. Come here, get over. You're the one that brought in this. You brought me this can of Beavertown Skull King Double IPA.
I did not bring it to you. It was a gift from Jeremy.
But you knew it was
a
good
gift to me, to you. I re-gifted it to all of us.
Have you had Beavertown at Beer Table?
Yes, a couple of times, but also was just visiting there and loved it and had a great time, which is why I'm excited to be here today.
And Michael, when did you guys first start bringing Beavertown to the States?
It was very recently. I believe our first tank container from them was in about January or maybe like early February. So far, in fact, we've only brought them in the brewery on draft via one of our two of our tank container units. So far, we've had their Appellation, which is they call it a barley champagne. It's a...
Whoa.
No?
Originally we called it a barley champagne.
All right, so things have
but
changed,
then, but then we heard from France, and apparently they don't like you calling anything produced outside of the Champagne region of France champagne. So we renamed it Appellation, and it's a Bramley Apple Saison. It was a beer brewed inspired by champagne, but it very much is not called that.
Well, that's actually one of the kegs that we have that's going on tonight.
That's right.
Yeah.
Is the Appellation.
Appellation, yes. And that was inspired by a letter we got from France talking about the Appellation of the grapes from the Champagne region and how that gives the legitimacy to the beers produced. But some of the other beers we've sent over are Black Betty, which is a black IPA, hints of licorice, very kind of Moorish beer, and then most recently our Blood Orange IPA, which is called Bloody Owl. It's a seasonal beer. We get blood oranges from Italy. We take the zest and the juice of the blood oranges, and we add it late in the boil of a big, hoppy, juicy IPA, and it's a stunning beer.
That one just landed in the States about 2 weeks ago.
So we have Paolo here from Del Borgo.
Yep.
And what do you think of this English double IPA?
Actually, it's really good. We got the opportunity to visit Beavertown just a couple of days ago, actually. And it's impressive how everything is changing in London right now and in the UK scene. So by the traditional stuff to the new one, and Beavertown, I think they represent basically the best of the new trend over there in the UK.
Thanks for that, Paolo. Checks in the mail.
We got quite a show. Jonathan White, our favorite cheesemaker from Bobolink, is here. Stopping by, great beer guy. And this is an awesome show. We're going to have to edit this down. We're not sure what's going on, but we're in the front of Jimmy's number 43 on a Friday night. We're partying, getting ready for Nepenthea tomorrow. And I do credit to Mateus and Be United. I love this whole community that you guys have built, where you've got, it's like we're all family. It's like for us as a radio show and a pub, we have a relationship with you guys. For these brewers, you know, like Ducato and Borgo and Hidachino and Beavertown, some of us have been together for so many years now.
Yeah, one of the most important things of our company philosophy when we start working with a new producer is that it's not simply just a relationship between an importer who's buying a product from a brewery who's selling a product. What we really try to build with all of our breweries is a relationship, a real partnership. So this comes through collaboration. This through the Zimatore project, which consists of partially barrel aging some of the beers that our brewers produce in Europe and overseas at our facility, or trying to listen to inspiration from our brewers, or even giving them ideas for things that they can produce at their own breweries. So again, like a lot of our philosophy comes down to collaborating with our breweries and really creating a true partnership. And then this expands, obviously, from us and the breweries to then us and bars.
We have, so let's go over Paolo Bertani with Dura del Borgo. So today on draft, we'll be serving the Perla Porchi.
Perla Porchi, right.
And tell us about that beer.
So this beer, it's one of the experimental beer that we make. We make a lot of different beers on a year basis. We make more than 30 beers. And one of the most things that Leonardo, since the beginning, so since like 2005 when the brewery was founded, wanted to do was to push the boundaries of the concept of the beer over. So, and this is an example, for instance, because we make a lot of different beers, and Michael and Matthias, they know really well that we make crazy stuff. One of the crazy stuff is this one that we're going to have in a little bit, and it's basically our interpretation of a classic style, an old style, like oyster stout. In this one, we decided to bring some, obviously, some fresh oysters. So every batch of 2,500 liters, we use 50 kilos of oysters. Fresh.
But the whole oysters in, or the
whole oysters? The whole oysters. And actually, also, we add 10 kilos of Tellina. Tellina are typical from our region. So we put 50 kilos of French oysters and 10 kilos of Tellina every batch that we make.
Tellina's clams?
Yeah, exactly.
I think the proper English translation is bean clam.
Bean clam. Okay. Yeah. Cool.
So you have clams and
oysters. Tellina is not a translation. No, it's like,
they really don't exist over here.
So why do you think historically people put oysters in beer or seafood in beer? I heard lobster shells.
Well, there are a lot of stories about that. I think that most of them are like legends or something like that. But basically, yeah, it was, I think that the most reliable one is just the stout always pair really good with oysters. Historically in Ireland, it's a style that has its roots in Ireland. But we wanted to make our version because our philosophy is to give an interpretation of classic style and not just to copy classic styles. And about this beer, it's really good. Actually, the fact that we make just once a year, so we brew just a small amount. But the day we make this beer, we create a big event that is called Oysters Day. And it's actually, we invite 300 to 400 people to the brewery to celebrate this beer all together. And right after the batch, we put over the oysters and we cook spaghetti with those oysters for 300 people. And there is a vibe during this day that it's great.
How do you cook spaghetti with oysters?
Well, actually, I don't cook, fortunately, but we got some really skilled guys and the whole crew that they could make it really good, actually, inside the brewery.
That sounds good. So, Giovanni, tell us, what do you know about Vino del Borgo?
Vino del Borgo... belongs
like
to the second
wave. Yeah, friends.
Absolutely. Belongs to the second wave of the Italian craft beer movement, of the craft brewery movement. Because the pioneers started in 96. Pioneers such like Birrificio Italiano, Baladem, Birra del Borgo, and the Birrificio del Ducato belongs to the second wave. Second wave is, you can say, 10 years later. Birra del Borgo was founded in 2005 and Birrificio del Ducato in 2007. So, but we,
that's the second wave, 2 years later.
Yes.
It's a new industry, isn't it?
It is.
I love the scene, man. To me, this is what beer is about, and I love it. I love Italy, anyways. But what's different about the Italian brewers, Michael? Is it like they're cooking, or I don't want to stereotype Italians because I'm Italian too. I think the beers are better. I love them. I love their approach, their palates. You know,
which is different. Yeah, I can say that. Sorry.
Please, no, please.
I can say that. The approach that we have is completely free from any beer tradition. We're not like Germans that are stuck in their traditions. We have to. We can be creative, and in some way we can push the boundaries of the beer world. We have created some new styles or new beers. Beer with wine must, chestnut ales.
Let's say for you, since you've been brewing in Italy, tell me about five different breweries that you really respect that you think represent Italian craft beer.
Well, it's very hard to tell five breweries, but I can say Birrificio Italiano, because I was trained at Birrificio Italiano, and I think they are very good in their job. They're German inspired, but always very clean, and the philosophy is solid. Birra del Borgo, I really respect Borgo because of their creativity. Then I like Lover Beer,
yeah.
Because it's a Hebrews beer, completely new and different, and he's radical. The only brews sours, and who else? I can't tell.
Three is enough.
Now we get the
there's more.
The Del Borgo Stout's coming out now. This is a challenging show, and I'm really excited to do it. We got like five or six brewers from overseas here in Jimmy's number 43. It's a loud party, having fun. We'll be back in a few minutes on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
In 1996, L. Knife & Son acquired Union Beer Distributors, which was originally located on Union Avenue in Brooklyn, but has since expanded to its present location alongside the English Kills Canal in Williamsburg, Brooklyn. Union Beer has grown dramatically in the last decade as the primary distributor of Anheuser-Busch products for Kings County, Brooklyn, through the hiring and development of the best people in the industry. In 2003, Union Beer acquired a powerful catalog of specialty brands, which immediately positioned them as the craft beer supplier to accounts in Manhattan, Brooklyn, Queens, and Staten Island. Union perpetually tweaks their portfolio to maintain the highest level of stylistic breadth with the most coveted brands available. Through the highest possible level of service, outstanding salesmanship of the ultimate lineup of brands, and a paramount focus on education on all levels, Union Beer has solidified its position as the only source for the best selection of beers in the 14 counties of southeastern New York. For more information, visit greatbrewers.com.
Hey, welcome back to Beer Sessions Radio on the Heritage Radio Network. We're a special show here. It's May 1st, 2015. We're at Jimmy's number 43. It's a wild crowd, but we have five different brewers from all over the world here as part of the United in the Pentheus celebration that's happening tomorrow. So when you hear this, it might be a month later. But I've had a great time today. I've talked with the guys from Del Ducato in Italy, Del Borgo, Beavertown in England, and we're still talking. Also joining us is Domaine Dupont, Jerome Dupont, who's inspired us so much with cider and the cider scene in Europe. So first, let's finish up with the Italian guys. So right now we're drinking the Oyster Stout from Del Borgo. We got Paolo, he came out.
Yep.
And last night you guys were in Rome. Tell me what you did in Rome last night.
Actually, probably it's better that Giovanni could speak, because Leonardo, that he's coming here, and Giovanni had an event together in Rome. That actually means to me, and then I'll leave the words to Giovanni, that it really represents how the craft beer scene in Rome, in Italy, it's joined together. So it's a community. We don't see each other as competitor, but we see each other as other companies where you could share project ideas and the willing to go forward.
Yes, that's really true. And especially in Rome, there's a huge amount of fans of beer geeks, and Rome is one of the places in Europe where you can find a lot of pubs and beer shops that carries only craft beers. And I can tell you, Rome has about 100 pubs that serves craft beers, and about more than 100 beer shops. And Rome is a town of how many people? 6 million?
No, maybe three.
Three million, right,
yeah.
Okay.
There's one guy I know. There's a Johnny's Off License.
Yeah.
It's funny. He was one of the first guys I met from the world of Italian craft beer, and he was coming to New York, and this was back in 2006. And I realized that A, he knew more about European beer than I did, and then he knew more about American craft beer. And he put me to shame because even back in 2006, I only had a few local craft beers here, primarily Six Point, which is the new brewery in Brooklyn. But I didn't have that many American craft beers. I still had mostly European beers. And meeting Johnny from Johnny's Off License was a huge change for me. I was embarrassed. He said, what New York beers do you have? I said, well, I have Six Point on draft, which is really great. I only had some bottles of Omegang. Other than that, I was old school. For a long time, all the great beers were made in Europe in the great beer styles. So it's funny that Johnny from Rome is the guy that made me start thinking I should pay more attention to American craft beer. I mean, what's his store like? Is that a respected store? Or is it North?
He was the real pioneer, I think, because he opened up. Actually, I remember the day Johnny opened. It was 2003. So he was the real pioneer in the whole scene in Italy and in Rome, especially. Right now, it's, as Giovanni said, it's full of different bottle shop, craft beer bar, and stuff like that. And it has become in some way trendy to serve craft beer. But at the really beginning, like 10 years ago, there were just a few pioneers that were able to talk in a proper way about craft beer and to serve in a proper way. One of these, for instance, is Emanuele of Marchesia di Montefra, that is one of the best beer bar in Europe. And I honestly think that Rome right now, it's one of the best city in Europe, maybe the best city in Europe to drink and to home, hang around and to drink craft beer.
I agree.
What are some places? My friend, you know Katie Parla?
Yeah, we know really
Katie
well.
Katie Parla's come to New York and she's done Italian beer tastings. She's very critical. She's a tough critic.
Yeah.
What are some places that you would take Katie Parla in Rome to drink Italian craft beer?
Ma che siete venuti a fare?
She was, beer
and food.
Yeah,
beer. Barley wine. Mastro Titta, because it's a place that deserves a visit.
Yeah, actually, I remember
the late night.
Katie Parla was really critical at the beginning with a place that we got some participation, that it's the Open Baladen bar in Rome, opened in 2009, with more than 40 Italian craft beer on draft. And Katie, actually, she was really criticized with the bar at the beginning, but then she changed totally her mind, and right now she's over there like at least once a week. So it's how it's representative of how everything is changing about craft beer. It's no more about something about just bar beer geek, but it's for everyone.
I think for a time, if someone were an expert, like Katie Parla is a food expert, is American, writes the New York Times, but she lives in Rome. She was probably looking for things like food and maybe wine. So maybe for her to learn about Italian craft beer, it's a learning curve, right? Do you feel that your other customers are the same way, or that do all the young people, are they interested in beer?
I think that young people right now, it's really interesting to see how young people is reacting to craft beer, because we are basically facing a generation, the ones between, let's say, 18 years old and 25 years old, that basically their first beer was a craft beer. So they didn't have to change and to shift from the commercial one to the craft, but they just grew up with the craft beer, and this is really important because it's the new generation, and in terms of market, obviously, it's something that we're gonna have to look at.
And the first choice of the young people is IPAs, of course, like everywhere. But that's something that I told to Leonardo last night. We at Birrificio del Ducato and you and Birra del Borgo, we are more focused on the established real Italian tradition, which is not only the IPAs.
Absolutely.
It's so boring IPAs, because we brew very good IPAs like you, and they are very appreciated, and we sell a lot of it, and we enjoy our IPAs. It's not only about IPAs.
Okay, last question for the Italian guys. Let's say you were born 20 years earlier. You were older. What jobs would you have?
That's a tough one. Well, basically, I don't think craft beer because 20 years ago in Italy was just impossible. I have no idea, actually. I consider myself lucky to be in this field, and I really enjoy this field, so that's all.
I can't tell. I think maybe I would be in a medical doctor or a research in the...
You would have been a doctor, yeah. But that's why we love craft beer, all the best. We're going to jump. We got so many people here tonight, so many important people. Jerome DuPont from Domaine DuPont. I will say that one reason I know you,
yes,
is that many years ago in New York in Blind Tiger, the chef that worked with me said, you have to try this thing. It's called Pommeau.
Okay.
And, you know, you tell us about Pommeau, but that's what we're drinking now, and it was your Pommeau.
Yeah.
And for many years, I put it into a cask on the bar, and it was the one thing we had that was stronger than beer. So we're actually doing this in the right procession.
Right way, yeah.
Yeah. We had a bunch of beers, and now I want something else.
Okay.
And now I want Pommeau.
Okay.
So tell us about Pommeau and your family businesses.
So Pommeau is a traditional sort of fortified wine produced in Normandy. Farmers in Normandy, when they wanted to keep sweet cider, the only technique they had was to add some strong spirit to stop the fermentation. And that's how Pommeau was in every farm, I would say, for a long time, in every Normandy farm. And it's only been before the turn of the 20th century that Pommeau became an appellation in France, and that it has been regulated. But really, the origin of Pommeau is really farmers wanting to keep sweet apple juice, and they had no temperature control, they had no pasteurization, so they would
add... So it's a way to preserve it.
A way to preserve it by killing the fermentation by adding strong spirit to it. So that's the story of Pommeau, and I mean, my family's been producing cider and Calvados and Pommeau for 4 generations, so you know it's a natural part of the portfolio of the Domaine DuPont.
Yeah, I think the Pommeau is the undiscovered part of cider, because even in New York State now, there's a South Hill Cider and Finger Lakes, they're making a nice Pommeau.
Okay.
But the first time I had it was from you guys.
Okay.
So it makes a lot of sense. You're saying in the old days, you'd be fermenting cider.
Yep.
And they want to keep it sweet.
They want to keep it sweet, and the only way to stop the fermentation was to add strong alcohol to it. And because in Normandy, the local spirit was Calvados, then that's what the farmers were doing. Stop the fermentation, keep the residual sugar in the apple juice, and then drink it as and when they wanted it.
So in like the procession of a meal, this is like a port, a sherry.
Yeah, in Normandy you drink it two ways. You drink it either as an aperitif. French people are quite fond of sweet alcohol before dinner. Also like a port and an after dinner drink. So there's two ways of drinking Pommeau.
Now there's some other guys here that are making mead and cider too. So there's a gentleman here from Maine. Try some of the Pommeau. I'm trying to get a little cider conversation going too.
Oh, lovely.
I know what happened was that you were one of the inspirations for a lot of American cider makers.
Okay.
And there's Cider Week in New York that's been really big. But I don't know if you followed the development of cider in
New York. I know cider category has been growing very strongly in the U.S. And we've also seen that in the amount of cider that we sell in the U.S. through Beer United. So, it's very interesting to see that, I understand that, you know, Americans discovered that the pioneer's drink was cider, and they're coming back to the original drinks, and there's a big attraction on cider nowadays, and it's great. It's good for the category.
You make some great ciders.
Okay,
tell us the different ciders that you make. Because I know the cider boucher.
We make the cidre boucher, which is a traditional farmhouse cider that you can find in any farm, any cider production in Normandy. And thanks to Matthias and Beer United, who was a very good inspiration to us in trying to go a little bit further from the traditional boundaries. We've developed some other ciders. the Cider Reserve, which is a cider that we age in some of our Cabernet barrels. It was one of the first cider we've developed thanks to the ideas that Matthias suggested us. And also we produced a triple cider coming from the inspiration of the triple Belgian ales. Triple fermentation. First fermentation on the natural sugar of the ciders. Second fermentation with added sugar in the tanks. And then the third fermentation at the bottling stage. And the idea is that because we only use very bitter apples, we try to balance out the bitterness of the apples with the alcohol strength of the cider to have a balanced cider. Another cider that we've produced is a cider that is inspired by the Champagne region. So we have called the Cuvée Colette from my grandmother that is produced just like Champagne with méthode traditionnelle, remuage, dégorgement. And another cider that we've...
What's it like being in a family business?
What is it like?
Were you working there as a child or did you...
No.
You never wanted to?
I did my own thing, and I joined. I was an engineer. My background is engineering, and I joined the family business in 2002. So in the family, my father did the same. He did his own thing, and then joined the family business later on, which helps to open your mind, you know. So it's good to work in the family business. There's some good and some bad things, you know.
And do you have brothers and sisters?
I've got a sister working with me.
So when you were younger, did you have competitions? Or?
No. It's all, you know, yeah. It's not something you think of when you're... Well, my father's never put any pressure on us about, you know, who's going to take over the business. It was my own will to come back and sort of take the, continue his family history.
In France, how does it work for like succession from, you know, parent to child in a business?
How does it work?
I mean, will you own the business or is there some? Yeah, I don't know what the rules are for France.
How
do you pass down a business?
You have to follow certain procedures, but it's, you know, it's pretty simple, pretty natural. It really depends on, you know. It's more of a personal issue, you know. Does the family, does the father wants to give up the business and transfer to the other, or does he want to keep it a little longer and do his own thing? But technically speaking, there's a lot of family business in Normandy, in France in general, and it's something that is, I would say, pretty easily under control. Nothing really special about that. Very natural.
I know France has great traditions of food and cider and wine. I mean, do you think about that a lot, that you have to keep a tradition going?
No, the idea is not you have to. The idea is that it's fun. There's a lot of things that you can do, a lot of potential, especially in the cider area. That is where if you open your eyes a little bit, you can, and if you get inspiration of the beer world, where the people in the beer world are very innovative. And if you're happy to sort of jump the boundary from being very traditional to open your eyes and be innovative, you can do a lot of things in the world of food and wine and spirits. And I'm having fun. I tell you, I'm having fun, and it's great to try new ciders. It's great to try new Calvados. You know, we do also new things on the Calvados side. No, it's fun, really. It's fun.
Same for me. I feel the same. And I take my inspiration not only from the beer world, but from other world, like the wine world. In this case, the world of cider and cannabis. And also, I take my inspiration, of course, from literature, from music, from the other world of culture. Because I think that we are very lucky because our job is sort of I consider my job a way to express myself.
Yeah.
My insights, my visions, my inner world. So, and you like you.
Same. Yeah.
And I really appreciate all the things that I have the chance to try from you. I really found a great complexity and the greatest happiness.
Yes.
And I'm respect to this because I from a producer, from my point of view, it's something that's very hard to do.
I agree, and I must say that Be United and Matthias from Be United was a great help for that, because when before we started to work with Be United, we were very we're following the traditions of France with Calvados and cider, and Be United and Matthias was an eye opener, and he really always pushed us in trying new things, thanks to this beer world and this innovation on the craft beer side, it really had an impact on us. And Matthias and Be United was a real important stone in our business to go outside of the tradition and try to express ourselves and try new things, being not complex, have no complex about that. And it was really a big step for us in the mind. You know,
I can tell the same, because Matthias has always been on our side and has always pushed us
to support
creativity.
Your creativity.
He's also, I know what Be United does is they're helping you guys make a quality product and find the markets for it. Because if you had a bad importer, you'd be what?
Yeah.
You still have to sell something.
But he's very supportive in any new things. And that's very special, and that's priceless for producers like us, I think.
I just want to say, I think that he is a visionary. There's little parts of this business of beer and cider, and importers is an important role, distributors an important role.
Yes.
And we do all work together, because without the importers and distributors, and bar owners like us, we wouldn't have this great product.
And you guys have a very important role as well to promote the products.
Yes. But we do try to work with the best distributors and importers, because they're kind of our agents, and they're between us. And now we're all friends, right? We do some high fives. I could talk to you guys.
Thank you very much for your time.
What's special about this is these brewers are here, and cider makers in New York tomorrow. They're going to Connecticut. We're lucky to see them, and I'm feeling very honored today. I'll sign off and give big thanks to our sponsor, Union Beer Distributors. And that's it for tonight. Thanks so much. We'll see you next time on Beer Sessions Radio. All right.
Thanks for listening to this program on heritageradionetwork.org. You can find all of our archived programs on our website or as podcasts in the iTunes Store by searching Heritage Radio Network. You can like us on Facebook and follow us on Twitter at @heritage_radio. You can email us with questions anytime at info@heritageradionetwork.org. Heritage Radio Network is a 501c3 nonprofit. To donate and become a member, visit our website today. Thanks for listening.